Welcome to the Cyber Union Talk Show for Monday, July 16th, 2012. Quit your mumbling!
Hello and welcome to Cyber Unions. I'm Walton in a miserable, cold, wet, and rainy Scotland, and with me is...
Steven in... Actually, it is kind of wet today again in Mexico City, but it rains every day in the afternoon. We get sun in the morning, though. That's always nice. It's very routine, though. But yeah. How have you been, Walton?
I've been well. I mean, we've not spoken for a while. We decided to give our dear listeners a week off from our ramblings. So I've been very busy. I've done lots and lots of things, but no, I've been good. How are you?
Good and bad. In the last 2 weeks, there's been some really good news, and there's also some very disappointing bad news. Which do you want to hear first?
Tell you what, why don't you start with the bad news, and then we'll go in a bit of a downer about that, and then you'll cheer us up with your awesome good news, and then we'll have a happy show. Yeah?
Okay, that sounds good. So, the bad news. The bad news, it's somewhat connected to wonderful free software in one way, but... Thursday night, I was coming home from a meeting with actually talking about web design for the Emiekis Tamalakaya website, and I then went to visit a friend to help him with his computer. He was having trouble getting his computer to run with Linux. Fixed that, started my way home, and is this a way that I've gone so many times at night? I would take the subway to like one stop to this one road. I'm always going to mess this up. Called Lazaros Caranos, which is the name of some president, but it's a street, but it's also a subway station. And outside of the subway station is a trolley bus or an electric bus that goes very close to where my house is, and that's why I go that way, because it gets me home pretty directly. It takes a little bit longer, but I've done this a number of times, and when I was crossing the street to get to the trolley bus stop, I noticed that there's nobody there, which was kind of unusual, because usually at this hour there are a number of people waiting in line. And I looked down the road and saw I had just missed a trolley bus, and decided, like, all right, well, I'll just go up there and just hang out. And when I got there, I wanted to call a friend, and I pulled out my phone to check my saldo, or how much credit I had. And I had noticed another person had walked up with me, but I didn't really think anything of it, until I started to put my phone away when he grabbed my shoulder and threatened me with a rather large knife. And I actually didn't understand what he was saying, because I was kind of caught up in, like, why are you bugging me? And I didn't see the knife right away. And then I saw the knife, and I'm like, what the hell? I'm getting mugged. And I was concerned for two reasons. One, I had the cell phone in my hand, and in my bag was my laptop. So I'm like, fuck. And I decided, because this person was a bit smaller than me, that I could fight him a bit.
Very wise.
To a certain extent, yes. And I pulled him around the backside of the bus station, where there were three other people who unfortunately didn't do a fucking thing to help me. But in the commotion, I tripped and he tripped. We're down on the ground, and at one point it looked like he was going to try to actually stab me, and I went and grabbed it with my hand, which ended up cutting my hand. And it was a pretty damn sharp fucking knife. Like, the size of the knife, it would be about maybe 10 inches long. Oof. And probably about 3 inches thick or wide, I guess. It's kind of a knife that you'd use if you went hunting and you were trying to cut open a dead animal. And at one point, like, because I was fighting him so much, he tried to knock me out with the butt of the knife on my head, and that didn't do anything because my adrenaline was kicking so much. And I pushed him even further and leaped backwards, and he went flying into the chairs that these two people were sitting on. Again, they did nothing. And eventually I was vulnerable to a point where I actually could get stabbed, and I was like, fuck it, just take the fucking phone, because he's holding onto it with his other hand. And he went running off, and my hands were freaking covered in blood. So
are you all
right? I'm okay. It took me a day of kind of recuperating and getting down from the adrenaline rush and going to the doctor to just get checked out and getting a tetanus shot. But other than that, I mean, they weren't deep cuts. It was just a sharp knife that just cut very well. And
now you've lost your awesome phone.
Yes, and that's what pisses me off so much, because now I have another phone, but it's not my Linux-based phone.
So, so you're going to have to go buy it back, are you?
I mean, my friends here are saying we could go down to the Cellular Plaza and probably find my actual phone. I haven't done that yet because I don't want to... I don't know how much they're going to sell it for, and I don't know if I want to spend the money now, but I'm just pissed. So... That was so my bad news.
That is really bad news. So I'm hoping that the good news is so good that it overshadows the dreadful tragedy that happened to your hands and your phone.
Yeah. Well, so we'll see. The good news is, as you know, and as our, many of our listeners know, I've been very, very active within the May 1st community since about December, since becoming a member and since we moved our site over to it. I've been participating in their IRC chats and been. I ended up getting onto the support team because I was there a lot and trying to help with installing new software that we're testing and for possible membership benefits and everything else. And about a month and a half ago, I had gotten an email to the support list that was just talking about that May 1st has come across some money for funding for people to go on some trips that were on the support team. They're cool, and I didn't think about it, and I didn't actually really look at them. I looked at one of them, which was here in Mexico City. I'm like, oh, that's cool. I don't even need to ask for the money because I'm right here. And the other one was for the World Social Forum in Brazil. That's going to be the World Social Forum on Palestine. And I didn't honestly think anything of it at the time. It was just something that was just going out to the group, and I'm like, well, I'm new here. I'm not going to bother asking, and I wasn't really thinking about it anyhow. And then in the last 2 weeks, I got an email from the director of May 1st and saying that there was a support team meeting and they have decided that they want me to go to the World Social Forum.
Oh, fantastic, huh?
So, awesome. Yeah, so I get to go and I'll be representing May 1st and participating with it. The World Social Forum on Palestine in Brazil will be – the website will be – is hosted by May 1st as well. The thing is, I need to get caught up to speed because the other person that's going is this lady Mallory, who's also an active member within the May 1st community, and she's having a baby next month, and she's going to be on maternity leave. The World Social Forum is in November, and she and I are going to be going, so I have to do conference calls every 2 weeks, and we'll be getting up to speed and getting in contact with everybody. And more importantly, I have to learn Drupal. I have to learn Drupal very quickly. Because part of supporting the site is knowing Drupal, since the site is on Drupal or is built on Drupal, and I need to know how to manage the site before I get down there in November and supporting it before I get down there in November. So so yeah, it's exciting. It's very, very exciting. It'll be a 3-day trip down to Porto Alegre. And hopefully my Spanish will be much better, but I hope I'll understand Portuguese because that's what they speak in Brazil. But from what I understand, I can understand Portuguese. I may not be able to speak Portuguese, so we'll see how that goes.
Well, that sounds absolutely fantastic because learning Drupal as well is a project. You know, it's good to have a project and something that you need to do to focus on, and it'll be awesome to go to Brazil. So
yeah, I'm very, very, very excited. I mean, it'll be a great trip. I mean, the farthest south of the Americas I've been to has been Guatemala. And so to go down to actual South America will be an amazing experience. And just to be there for the World Social Forum, I actually have not attended a World Social Forum event, mostly because usually I don't have the money to go. So I'm pretty excited to have an opportunity both to be part of May 1st as a representative of the group and to be supporting it and to also attend and participate, which should be really, really exciting. So.
Yeah, and I'm already looking forward to the shows that you're going to do from there or about your experiences down there, because I think they'll be absolutely fascinating.
Yeah, definitely. And especially because Brazil is one of the leading countries that is very far ahead in using free software and using Linux as a major operating system for the entire country. So it'd be a lot of fun to get involved with that. And also because of the movements that are down in Brazil. I mean, Brazil is one of the so-called leftist countries. Not exactly like Venezuela in the media perspective, but they have been doing very, very unique things. They've gotten themselves off of dependency of foreign oil and all these other things too. So it'd be really interesting to actually participate and see what the discussions go about and to meet a lot of really amazing people. So I'm pretty psyched.
Yeah, that sounds really, really good. Well done.
Yeah. So I hope that outplays the bad. It does in my mind because, you know, material goods are material goods, but this is something that I can actually have a participation and impact on actual change instead of worrying about one material good that got stolen from me.
Sure. Yeah.
So how have things been on your side of the pond?
Well, I've been really busy this past week, but it's been good busy. I went to two conferences. I went to Unite Political School in Durham, and I also went to the Global Labour Institute Summer School in Barnsley in South Yorkshire. And that was fantastic. It's at a college in South Yorkshire, which is quite known for being left-wing. It's a left-wing college called Northern College. And it's an old stately home, which has been turned into a college that mostly specializes in helping people who missed out on the education system in the past. And we had a fantastic anarchist tour of the college from one of the staff members who looks like Rasputin. You know, he took us around and he's basically knew his history perfectly, but he was going, you know, took us around and going, these evil bastards built this building and here they are and they were slavers. And it was kind of nice to hear the sort of history of this old estate, but, you know, without the all the reverence for the lords and ladies and everything. It was all about, you know, how wicked these people were and how we've liberated it in the name of the people type of stuff. So firstly, that sort of was a good environment to be in, but crucially, the summer school had close to 100 trade unionists from all over the world and really, really interesting people. So I met some fascinating people from all over and heard firsthand some of the union struggles that are going on. One of the people who was there was Kamal Abbas from the Trade Union and Workers Service in Cairo. That was really interesting. It's not actually a union. It's a, I guess, a labor service organization or an NGO that supports the development of trade unions. And so that was all about how under Mubarak, the only unions that were allowed were state controlled and they were totally corrupt, as you might imagine. And over the past few years, there've been increasing labor unrest and people attempting to create their own unions that genuinely represent them. And it might be accurate to say that the Arab Spring was really born in the Mahalla textile factories in Egypt, because it didn't really make the media, but since about 2005, 2006, there's been a lot of militancy, people forming their own unions and taking industrial action. And so his organization supports these unions and attempts to basically lobbies for them to be allowed to organize. And this hasn't happened yet. After the revolution, as you know, the Supreme Council for the Armed Forces kind of took over a caretaker role in the Egyptian government, and they have not been pro-union at all. So there was supposed to be a trade union liberties law passed in Egypt and it didn't get passed, so the right to organize is still restricted there. And so we asked him what he thought of the Muslim Brotherhood candidate Morsi winning the election. He says they're also anti-union. He said that they're Islamists, so economically they are neoliberal and they believe in charity. So they don't believe in people helping themselves. So their whole model of sort of making the world a better place is to give out charity. And so they're totally anti-union because it upsets the natural order of things. So, yeah, so it was really interesting to hear that perspective. And it was, you know, absolutely fascinating to hear the struggles that are going on in Egypt and really, really interesting stuff. One of the other people I met was a guy called Lef Kretsos, who is an optimistic Greek, which is kind of unusual. I've spoken to a few Greeks in the past few months, and generally, as you can imagine, they paint a bleak picture of what's happening in Greece. But Lef is, among other things, a Syriza activist, and he is really, really optimistic because he feels that the development of Syriza is an absolute turning point, particularly for the European left, but kind of almost for the world left, because, you know, the left has been in not a very good place, certainly since the early 90s, late 80s, early 90s. Social democracy has hit a dead end. The regimes in Eastern Europe turned out to not offer any kind of realistic alternative. And so, you know, there's been a bit of an impasse for the left, and he feels that the development of Syriza is a real turning point because what happened was kind of mass consolidation. I guess the way he puts it is it started out with strikes and then it went into occupations, then consolidation, and then voting. I know you're not a fan of voting, but basically the development of that political party meant that there was a way to consolidate all the political programs that were happening anyway, like the strikes and the occupations were kind of pulled together into one big movement, which was able to actually contest power. And they didn't get it now, but they're likely to get it in future. And they're still really linked to the base. So, you know, he thinks that the rest of Southern Europe is going to see similar movements, initially the rest of Southern Europe, and that's going to inspire the rest of the continent. And he sees this as being the best opportunity that the continent has for a really long time to actually articulate a new kind of politics and to get people believing in something again and fighting for something. So he was really positive. I mean, he was all smiles about how finally there's a political alternative and we've, you know, there's a route out of this capitalist realist madness which is destroying everyone. So that was awesome. And then I met people from the energy union in Norway whose members are on strike on the oil platforms. I met a woman from a construction union in Namibia, people organizing oil workers in Kazakhstan who are having a really hard time. So just really fascinating to hear everything that's going on around the world. And what was interesting about the process is that as the summer school went on, everyone became more radical, basically, because they come from their national unions with the perspective of their national politics and the organizational culture of their national union. And then we spend days speaking to each other and listening to each other, and you realize that everyone is going through the same shit. And the only way you're going to fight that is to actually take a radical perspective and unite everything. There is no national solution to it, and there's no solution within capitalism. So, you know, so everyone sort of halfway through the week, everyone was saying we need sort of mass occupations, general strikes, illegal activity, you know, resistance, all that kind of thing. And from mainstream trade unionists, it was really interesting to hear that there really is a growing radicalism and a desire to reach out also to other groups and pull it into some kind of consolidated international campaign. So I left feeling enthused that there are at least quite a lot of other people in the world who feel the same way that we do. And you know, despite all the, and I guess one of the things I realized is, you know, the system appears to be falling apart, but I guess I realized it's not going to collapse on its own. You know, it's going to get more and more brutal and more authoritarian in its attempts to hold onto power, but it won't collapse on its own, and we need to organize to bring it down and replace it with something else.
Yeah, no, that's clear. I think that's really good. It sounds like a summer school that one wants to go to instead of being forced to go into summer school. And maybe that's an American idiom, but yeah, no, that sounds really interesting. It seems like, I mean, I'm glad to hear that there are other people that have very similar perspectives and views on where things are going. Mm. And I think there are many opportunities that we have, and there are always opportunities when there's crisis. The question is what opportunities are taken advantage of.
Yeah. You know, one of the other things that was really interesting was one of the talks on economics, and how listening to that we realized that the game has actually completely changed because of the way so many multinational corporations are financialized to the extent that they make more money gambling on the financial markets than they do from making stuff. So even I think the example used was Porsche, the car manufacturer, highly profitable in their car making. They've got you know, one of the highest margins anywhere, and yet they make a lot more money essentially gambling and hedging on the financial markets. And so you have lots of profitable companies whose main aim is to free up as much capital as possible so they can gamble with it. So that's why, you know, over the past few years, we've seen lots of profitable companies closing, and trade unionists have been negotiating wrong because they've been going in there saying, this is profitable, why are you closing it? They say business need. Well, the business need is they don't care about making anything. They just want to lose, you know, get that money so they can go gamble with it. So it's interesting to realize that the game has changed to that extent, and that old negotiation of trying to ensure that you're super productive so that the company can keep making profit is actually not going to work anymore because they don't care. It's not even about making stuff. They just want the money. So that was insightful too.
Yeah, and though the very odd thing about that is that's such a short-term perspective, because you need to produce something in order to actually have wealth or profit, because if you don't produce anything, then what the hell, how do you eat, how do you survive, how do you sell, or how do you buy if nothing's being made? And Steven, it's still...
Yeah, I'm sick of explaining their system to them, capitalists. I wish they understood their own goddamn system.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's just clear that they're. I mean, if anything, it's more evidence that capitalism has always been a short term gain. It's never been a long term gain, and it used to be that the short term gain was production, and that you can make more profit just by production. But now they found another way to do it, mm-hmm. by ignoring the production side and said, well, let's have somebody else deal with the production side, but we're going to make money off of that production somehow. Mm-hmm. And the way they do it is by playing off the financial markets, which inadvertently are still dependent upon production of something, whatever that something is. Mm-hmm. Anyhow, yes. So if you are a capitalist, please listen so you understand your own fucking system. This is how it actually works and not the way you think it works. Sorry. Anyhow, but that sounds really interesting. I kind of wish I was able to go, but you know, skipping across the pond is a little bit harder for me. but yeah, so that's cool. It's very informative.
And there were actually a number of your compatriots there.
Oh, Americans or
yes, Americans.
Ah, okay, okay, cool. From
Leidenhout and from Cornell University.
Oh. Well, Cornell, I don't know, but actually, I know some professors there. But the labor notes people I know, I'm more familiar with. There are professors at Cornell that would teach in the labor program that I was at UMass Amherst in the summertime, but not when I was there, because I would be taking it during the fall and the spring. So I didn't get the professors that wrote the books that we read. Instead, I got to read the books that the professors wrote. but no, nonetheless, it's pretty cool. Labor Notes folks are pretty cool people. I'd love to actually reach out to them to start getting them to start using free software stuff. It would be nice to see them start utilizing some of that. But I have not had been in contact with them for quite some time. But glad to hear that you had a very, very eventful 2 weeks, actually, or a week, I guess, for that matter. So we should, I think, try to jump into some tech stuff if we want to keep the cyber part. So, Walton, you sound really good.
Thank you.
Sound quality is really good. It doesn't distort your accent still, but
well,
it's
no, I was about to say, I think that the accent distortion software seems to be working okay. I think I sound a lot clearer than usual, don't you?
Yes, clearer. That's true. but why would that be? What are we using today?
Today we are using something new, and it's called Mumble, and you made me install it, and I'm speaking to you on it. Explain to the nice people what Mumble is.
We have nice people that listen to the show? Okay, assuming that all the people who listen to the show are nice, and only those, the people who are not nice, please cover your ears. The server we're using it from is actually something May 1st just recently installed, which is a Mumble server. And it's going to be available for its members, and it was something that was done in the last week as well that since we've been gone. But Mumble is actually... People who play a lot of video games may be more familiar with it because Mumble is heavily used for people who are playing games online for verbal communication between them. And it's built on free software. And it's really, I think, very simple to set up. In fact, it takes you through a process of setting up the sound quality of when you're connecting. The cool thing is that you can have many, many people connected and the quality stays the same. So that's why I think your voice sounds really good, because honestly, I can't think of a time where we've had such really clear vocal experiences. And it's a pretty simple tool. You just download it, and it's cross-platform, so it'll run on Windows, or run on OS X, or run on Linux. It even did run on my phone that I no longer have. Sad face. and I can no longer test it there, which... man. All right, anyhow... Focus. but it's pretty cool. I was really excited when they decided to set it up, and it's really, I don't know, what was your experience in setting it up when I took you through it this morning, or this afternoon for that matter?
Well, I didn't really listen to you. I just clicked next, but it appeared to work, so I guess it was fairly simple.
Yeah, the only things that I've run into issues with is it is very particular when it comes to sound quality.
Mm-hmm.
That a lot of the other record or the other communication devices will block out echo effect a little bit better.
Mm.
Whereas here, like I was when we were testing it with one of the May 1st members, he was using a headset microphone,
mm-hmm.
and the earpiece on his headset was picking up. Mm-hmm. My voice, mm-hmm. or no, the microphone is picking up my voice from his earpiece, so I kept hearing myself, and I was thinking it was my problem. It turned out to be actually a problem with one of the users. So you do need to have pretty good recording devices or microphones and headphones to actually utilize this.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, you can get a lot of feedback where you keep hearing yourself, and it gets a little annoying where other people don't actually hear that, only apparently you do.
And it also records well, doesn't it?
Yeah, and that's the cool thing is it has a built-in recording feature, which we tested a little bit, but it's not as good as the Audacity recording on both sides like we usually do. But it's better than the other recording qualities that we've used with Jitsi and even Skype. So it's better in that sense, and the cool thing is you can record in OGG. So it automatically goes right into free software formats, which cool. is really, really cool. So that's what we're using. And I even like the little... lips on the interface is
yeah,
when I'm talking.
Cool.
My lips turn red and your lips turn red. So, that's our tech for today. Is there anything else you want to say about Mumble?
No, there isn't. I was just about to say, and in other news, science fiction has become science fact. Has it not?
It has, and I think we've talked about For the Win a number of times, and is a really good book for people who are still interested that want to see a connection between labor and technology, and a really good story that goes into it. But it's all a fictional story until the article we read,
mm-hmm.
which is quite connected to Diablo 3, which I know is a huge release. And
Diablo 3 is a game, just for people who aren't gamers, online games.
Yes. So Diablo 3 is built by the Blizzard Entertainment Company, which has made a lot of different games, even I think StarCraft back in the day, which was a really addictive game. But the newest one, Diablo 3, the headlines on the release were so big that even people I knew that were in tech, I didn't hear them from them for about a week because they were playing the game for so long. But the interesting thing about this article, which we'll put in a link in the show notes, which is titled Diablo 3, the Blizzard Sweatshop, which caught my interest. I quite literally stumbled upon it using Stumble. but it describes, I feel, almost exactly the economy discussed in For the Win.
Mm.
Do you want to elaborate on that a little bit?
Yeah, well, I mean, For the Win is about people who play online games, and they're gold farmers, so there's value in the games, and they play on online games to make money. So basically what's happened with Diablo 3 is that all the stuff that you get in the game, like, you know, you go and defeat someone and you pick up the Sword of 1,000 Truths or whatever it is, has a real value in dollars or whatever currency that you set up, and you can link your PayPal account to it. And so firstly, it's really interesting because people say it changes the way you play the game, because, you know, in a normal game you're carrying a bunch of stuff and you're hacking people up with swords or whatever it is you're doing, and you know, you see a better sword, so you drop the one you've got, pick up the other one and run along. But now suddenly you think, I'm not going to drop this, that's worth $20, I can sell that. And then, you know, so it changes the focus of the game from just being this escapist thing that you do for fun into, you know, something that you do for real money. And so some people get very, very heavily into basically trading and trying to make money on the game. And obviously people have written bots to do the same thing. And so it's kind of like a big online sweatshop because you know, how mad is it? Because once again, you're not producing anything, are you? You're wasting hours and hours and hours of time, not enjoying the game, stealing fictional digital swords and selling them on. So absolute madness, but yeah.
Yeah, but somehow what Diablo has done, though, is they've created some kind of use value out of your work that you're putting into it, which is, I think, the reference to the sweatshop, is that mm-hmm. suddenly that sword and those weapons that you have has some value that you can sell. That's the one part. But then Blizzard takes a cut.
Yes.
Because you can actually sell it. You can sell your sword, and you have a choice of either taking the money via PayPal and actually having the currency in hand so you could actually go buy something else in the real world, or you can put it onto the BattleNet service and buy other weapons within the game. And obviously, if you go through the Blizzard BattleNet service, you gain more value of it because you're able to put it to something that BattleNet can make money off of. But if you try to bring it to PayPal, which you need to connect your PayPal account to bring the money in the first place, Blizzard takes a 15% cut on it. So, like, you sell something for $20 and Blizzard gets a dollar out of that. And that doesn't really make any sense. Like, wait, Blizzard's making money off of this. So Blizzard makes a game, and probably at this point, I'm actually wondering if they even care if it's pirated, because they're going to still make money off the game. And they've figured out a way to make money off the game, even if it's distributed illegally.
That's very interesting, because that's likely to change games, isn't it?
Change the model
where it totally becomes an economy.
Well, and that's the thing. That's the disturbing part, is suddenly you have a market, and Diablo has just created a market. And it reminds me of even like iTunes, when Apple just started to create a market that they are the sole benefactor from. And in this case, Blizzard, no matter what situation, is a sole benefactor, and they're going to probably make more money by people selling and trading shit instead of selling the game. And so it completely changes the whole perspective of how they're going to make their money and where their real money is coming from. So now they've found a sustainable way to not have to worry about the game being stolen or distributed.
Yeah, they'll probably give it away free at some point in the future.
Yeah, and I mean, that's my guess. I mean, if this succeeds and their market starts growing really well, they're probably going to start doing that. They'll just release the games for free and people can play. Oh, you're playing a free game. Great, enjoy it. But by the way, to get those weapons and everything, you have to actually use money to buy that shit. But now you see exactly what For the Wind was talking about, of developing these economies out of nothing, which goes into the bigger economies. There are economies. Is it technically built out of nothing?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, exactly.
The real question is, are you going to dive into Diablo 3 and do some union organizing?
And that's the other interesting part of the For the Win aspect of it, is it possible to actually try to formulate that? And I don't know enough about the game, to be honest. But it would be pretty cool to see some kind of structure in that sense of, well, can you start creating a separate market that isn't within the Blizzard.net framework but doesn't give Blizzard money? Or is this going to be a negotiation at the end, like in the end of the book, where the company, Coca-Cola in that case, was the creator of the game, still survives, and now there's unions within the environment so people get a cut out of it? I don't know. I think it'll be interesting to see where it goes. It's not going to get me to buy the game right now, that's for sure. if they do come out with a free one, maybe I'll test it out and see what it's like and see if it's possible to develop some kind of organizing strategy. I mean, after all, what we're using right now is Mumble, and Mumble is a lead communication device for many people playing these types of games that are fully interactive. So it's very possible that you could develop a community online within Mumble to start organizing your labor union or union of sorts and see if you could actually try to pull this together of demanding something from Diablo, since they're the ones that are making the profit out of the situation from your labor. I hope we didn't kill people's kill the story on the book and the buzz about the book, but you should definitely read the book if you haven't already. So, and fortunately, it's via Creative Commons for people who don't already know, and we'll definitely put a link in the show notes so people can download it and read it on their own if they want to, as we have by the actual hardcover. And so Cory Doctorow can receive some benefits for his labor that he's put into writing the book. It's crazy when fiction becomes reality, and it's scary.
Yeah, and not in encouraging ways, unfortunately. I mean, there's some good fiction out there that I wish would become reality, but it's always the depressing stuff that seems to win.
Yeah, that's very true. But we'll see. I mean, who knows? Maybe the end of the story of For the Win for the Diablo would be that Blizzard has to pay the gamers instead of the gamers paying Blizzard.
Yeah.
I think it'd be pretty cool to actually see something like that actually happen, but we'll see. Nonetheless, that about wraps it up for me, Walton. I don't know if you got any more news.
No, that's me. I've got nothing else to add. So thank you, Stephen, for those really interesting insights. I really enjoyed it. That was really interesting. So thanks again, and thanks to everyone listening.
Yeah, definitely. We'll see you all next week. We should be back into a regular weekly podcast production as usual, hopefully. So, see you all next week.
Bye-bye.
Hopefully. Bye.